The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Tov, Howard. I don't know if you guys have been following the story about this Irish blogger who committed suicide after inventing this whole Holocaust story. Did you guys actually see that at all? It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
No, and we specialize in weird stories. So I can't believe, Zanati, I can't believe you missed that.
I know.
So this is a story about a blogger who I think is of German descent, but lived in Dublin in Ireland. Right. And she'd concocted this whole story about a German Jewish family that had been killed in the Holocaust at Auschwitz. She went to Yad Vashem, registered the name of 22 relatives who she said had died during the Holocaust, and their details were put on the database. And then a newspaper did a little bit more digging around, a German newspaper, to find that the whole story was concocted. None of it was true at all. Absolutely no basis of truth in the whole thing. And the next thing, the woman had committed suicide at her home in Dublin. It happened a few weeks ago. It turns out she was a little mentally unstable. I think we can kind of work that out. Mm. But it's just the weirdest, strangest story I've ever come across.
That is strange. And I mean, why do that?
Exactly.
The
that is the question. Why
would making up a Holocaust history?
Very, very strange indeed. Anyway, I thought I'd throw that into the mix this morning.
Yeah, very, very odd. An IDF officer and two soldiers injured last night in a serious incident involving exchange of fire along the Gaza border. What's known about the incident, Anthony?
So the IDF has actually issued an official statement about this incident that took place at about 2 o'clock in the morning last night, early this morning, when apparently a Palestinian person was identified approaching the Gaza border fence, which is something which is kind of quite usual. Nothing unusual about that. There's a normal procedure that the IDF soldiers follow. They went along to the area where the infiltration was detected. They've got standard ways of dealing with these things. And, you know, very frequently, the Gazans are sending children to undertake these kind of infiltrations. So, of course, the IDF soldiers need to be very, very cautious indeed. On this occasion, the individual concerned was wearing a uniform. He was armed with grenades and apparently a Kalashnikov rifle. He infiltrated into Israeli territory through the border fence. I'm not exactly sure how he managed to do that, but the Golani troops were there, and before they were able to take any action against him, he apparently opened fire towards them. And this is when one of the soldiers there, an officer, was moderately injured. And then he threw at least one grenade towards the soldiers who were approaching him from Golani. And that's where two other soldiers were also lightly injured, one by shrapnel. So these soldiers, of course, have been taken to hospital. Their families have been advised. And then further troops were deployed in the area in order to apprehend the individual. He was found, and in fact, there was an exchange of fire in which he was killed in the incident. But of course, it did create a little bit of an incident along that border. Roads were closed. An IDF tank also took up position and attacked a Hamas position in Gaza. So it did create a little consternation along that Gaza border. And ironically, this comes just a day after Israel had completed what has been described as the largest drill since the last conflict with Gaza. Along that border, saw 8 brigade commanders and hundreds of reservists and air and naval forces also involved. 4-day-long drill which took place along the Gaza border for Israel to try, where possible, to predict what kind of scenarios may arise, including all the forces, the coordination between the various forces. So that was, the incident that took place on last night was immediately after the end of this training exercise that has been going on for the past 4 days. So all in all, quite a serious incident. I haven't seen any large-scale responses from the Israeli side to this infiltration and to the fact that these soldiers were injured. And I'm not really sure whether the IDF is planning to respond in any meaningful way, but I think we're going to have to just keep an eye on the situation during the course of today and, of course, tonight, because it is traditional for the IDF normally to retaliate to these kinds of incidents at night rather than during the daytime hours. And so we will obviously keep an eye on that to see how it goes.
Absolutely. It's, certainly it's not a not a subject, and it's not a a story that ever seems to be making very much progress, unfortunately.
Unfortunately not, and it doesn't seem really to hit the world headlines.
No.
You know, these kind of things are just kind of, you know, another day in the life of, you know, nothing really unusual.
Absolutely. Jared Kushner was in Israel yesterday, and that was to meet Prime Minister Netanyahu on the subject of the U.S. peace plan. What's the latest now to come out of this discussion?
Well, the White House was yesterday denying the fact that this Camp David type arrangement is in the offing. This is what we spoke about yesterday, that there were reports that the U.S. administration was going to be hosting a summit for Arab leaders at Camp David even before the Israeli elections. The White House denied this yesterday in an official statement. But Jared Kushner was in Israel yesterday along with Jason Greenblatt, and they teamed up with U.S. Ambassador to Israel David Friedman, and they went along to see Prime Minister Netanyahu. We don't really know the details of all that was discussed in that meeting yesterday, but this is a tour that Jared Kushner is making of a number of Middle Eastern countries. He was in Jordan on Wednesday meeting with King Abdullah, and we understand that he's moving on from Israel today even to go to Egypt and apparently to Morocco and also to Saudi Arabia. So he's really doing a whole round of the main peace process allies as far as the U.S. sees them. Apparently the U.S. has a 60-page political chapter of the peace framework. We know that the economic chapter was sort of released in this summit that took place in Dubai a few weeks ago. And now there is apparently a political chapter which sets out the framework that the U.S. administration has been working on in order to present what they see as the political solution that the Arabs, the Palestinians in particular, and of course the Israelis will agree to. It's not clear what's in the chapter, and it's not really clear exactly what was discussed yesterday. But one of the little snippets that was quite interesting was that in that meeting, where of course I already mentioned David Friedman and Jason Greenblatt were involved, was also another U.S. representative, being the U.S. Special Representative for Iran, a man called Brian Hook. And he also was in Israel meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday. And I think that that is very significant indeed, because obviously he has less interest in the whole peace process of the century and more interest in what exactly is happening with Iran. And so I think it gives us an idea that Iran was definitely on the agenda yesterday when they met with the Prime Minister. So we're just waiting now quite patiently to see what is contained within this political chapter and whether it might be something that could be interesting to the Israelis and, of course, to the Palestinians, who have made themselves very scarce from this whole process. They are not getting along well at all with the U.S. Administration. And so, you know, all of that seems to bode quite badly for whatever the U.S. administration is involved with. But it's interesting that there is a huge amount of effort going into trying to put together some sort of a plan that everybody could sign up to. And it's also interesting that the Saudis and to some degree the Egyptians and the Jordanians are quite supportive of the U.S. efforts. It's just the Palestinians who are really not, and the Israelis who for now have been kind of left on the sideline, let's say, of the official meetings, although we know, of course, that the U.S. administration is very much involving the Israelis. So my, you know, my take from that, my assumption is that whatever is being presented by the U.S. administration to the meeting in Dubai and to other Arab meetings will already have been run past the Israelis and will have some sort of a tick of approval from the Israeli side to say, you know, we feel that this is a point from which we could potentially begin to negotiate. And so I doubt very much that the U.S. administration would present anything, be it economic or be it political, which the Israelis have already said, you know, this is something that we definitely wouldn't even consider. So that's what I think these meetings are really about, is just to run these things past the Israelis before they get presented to the Arab side. And if the Israeli side is generally happy or thinks that they could, you know, move forward from that starting point, then I think that that's the moment that it gets presented to the Arab parties. That's the way that I see this process happening at the moment. And, you know, I guess we're just going to have to continue because, as I say, the U.S. administration is putting a huge amount of effort into this whole peace process. And it would surprise me if they were doing so in the knowledge that it's a kind of waste of time and it's going to go nowhere anyway. You know, so my take is that at least in some quarters, they are being given positive feedback to say this could potentially be something that could work.
The problem one of the problems that I think is that there's so many people, and even within the United States itself, that would hate President Donald Trump to succeed at something like this, because this would be a legacy issue that has been that many before him, and certainly many of those who are politically a lot more experienced and refined than Donald Trump is have been unable to achieve. So I would imagine in the ugly world of politics that this is very much a feature as well.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think that we also need to bear in mind that, you know, the Israeli elections, which are due to take place in about a month and a half from now, are also a significant factor because, you know, having seen the cynicism with which the Camp David proposal was received because of the fact that many people are reading this to be an attempt somehow by President Trump to prop Netanyahu up in the next election. And of course, bearing in mind that whatever the Trump administration is busy with at the moment will almost certainly not be concluded in any meaningful way before the 2020 presidential elections in the United States. And so the question is, will Trump be able to get himself reelected in order to continue this process? Those are really critical factors because once Trump, you know, loses the next election, all of this, of course, goes away. But I think one of the things that we need to bear in mind is that when Israel has succeeded in entering into peace arrangements before, it has always come from the right wing of Israeli politics rather than from the left wing. And this is contrary to what people would instinctively believe. They would think that, you know, well, the left wing is more conducive to creating the you know, making the concessions that would be required in order to enter into peace agreements. So therefore, it's more likely that the left-wing parties would be the ones to enter into the peace agreements. And yet, that was not the case at all. And that might be something as well that we take into the Trump administration, where people would say, you know, he's the least likely to succeed because he's the person with the policies that are furthest away from, you know, what one might believe would be required in order to achieve the concessions and to make the relevant connections that would achieve the peace. So I think that, you know, we're learning from this that a tougher stance to begin with very frequently puts people in the mindset to be more amenable to concessions. Whereas if people come with a predetermined, a preconceived position with high expectations, and that's, you know, generally doomed to failure. So, you know, I just wonder whether that's not a factor that we might throw into the particular mix of what's going on at the moment as well.
Absolutely. We don't have a lot of time, but just to tell us very quickly, authorities in the French city of Strasbourg decided to reverse their ban on the waving of an Israeli flag at a football match in the city involving an Israeli team. Tell us quickly why the ban was implemented and what the story is.
Well, I was kind of, you know, I felt that I was a little provoked by this particular ban that the local authorities imposed on this football match that took place in the city of Strasbourg with Maccabi Haifa, because the French authorities decided that waving of Israeli flags, not a flag, but flags in general, both in the stadium and in the city center, was something of a provocation and could then provoke anti-Semitic responses. And so their way of dealing with this, rather than going to the heart of the anti-Semitism, is to say to the Israelis, don't wave your flags around in order to avoid provoking people who might behave in an anti-Semitic way to you, which I thought was a very, very strange response to a situation. Fortunately, ultimately, they saw a little bit more sense and they rescinded this ban, both in terms of waving flags in the city as well as waving flags in the stadium itself. But, you know, when people wave an Israeli flag in order to support their team, this apparently, at least in France, is considered to be a provocation of anti-Semitism. And so, you know, I'm happy that they rescinded the ban, but it does say quite a lot about what's going on in France right now and how the Israeli flag is considered to be a provocation of anti-Semitism rather than a show of support and patriotism for Israel.
Absolutely absurd, completely ridiculous, as a way to deal with the racial prejudice. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Wright, this is where we leave you. We'll chat to you on Monday. You have a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and a brilliant weekend. It's 8:01. Apologies, your news is slightly late.